everybody. Welcome to our show. This is Kindness Beyond the Veil, where we'll look at supernatural topics like ghosts, the afterlife, psychic ability, UFOs, starseeds and earth angels, magic and mysticism, but not with fear and loathing everywhere. There's positive and even loving sides to these topics, and that's the light we'll shine on for this show. This is your host, Chip Reichenthal. I was kind of thrust into these curiosities in 1979 when my best friend through childhood came to me at the moment of his death, and I had to know why. Back then, you couldn't talk about that stuff without getting a freak label, so I was pretty much on my own looking into these mysteries early on. Answers would lead to more questions and side realms like magic, stars and planets, energy and physics, and lately, starseeds and earth angels. But I found there's no good and evil in an animal kingdom, no good and evil in a plant kingdom. I've never had a negative encounter with ghosts or the dead. Now, almost 40 years into this, and there simply doesn't seem to be many looks into these fields without all the fear and loathing. Isn't there enough of that in life? Well, we're going to steer away from that, look at the good in people and these topics. Every week I get to highlight my heroes in these fields for you, introduce you to them, even if you knew all about them. There is kindness beyond the veil. I've seen a lot of it. There's answers to be found on the kinder side of things. And if there's light on the other side, we'll bring it into this side as well. And benevolence, empathy, compassion, the kinder side of science and phenomenon, the kindness beyond the veil. I'm your host, Chip Reichenthal. We're so glad you're joining us. Come on in. Welcome.
Oh, we are excited today, and we indeed welcome you with open arms to Kindness Beyond the Veil. This is your host, Chip Reichenthal. We've got an amazing show for you today with an absolutely phenomenal guest who can help us fine-tune our intuitive and psychic abilities, has a marvelous, unique way of looking at that process, and can help in spiritual teaching, channeling, accessing interdimensional worlds. She's quite the internet sensation and has a wonderful series of YouTube videos and will help you know if you're meant to be a light worker. And our honored guest today is none other than Crystal Ann Compton. And I've been very impressed by her work, so really glad she's with us today, beloved listeners. You can find more about her on her website, crystalanncompton.com, and she has a tremendously beneficial program called the Lightworkers Lab, where she teaches, guides, assists, does readings, and has quite a community there. And for that, you can check out the site, thelightworkerslab.com, and her YouTube channel, Crystal Ann Compton, has lots of great information, and we'll be bringing her on in just a bit. And normally in our introductory segment, we would have some brief thoughts in her regard. We do have a couple, just slightly less than brief. So we're making the first part of this intro a bit shorter to balance it all out, because not only are these tidbits in regard to Crystal Ann Compton, but also about the energies ahead for the next week or two. We hope we can offer some perspective that's helpful to you. So we take you back in time twice for that. But first, a very brief reminder that Kindness Beyond the Veil, this here show, runs on two networks, beginning Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, and also Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, both on the great WCET.fm, where you can find us at latenightinthemidlands.com, and we're on the Paranormal app via TalkStream Live. Also on WCET.fm, I co-host a show twice weekly called Supernatural Realm with the great Tim Roxbury hosting. Tim also produces this year's show, thankfully, so a loving shout out to Timmy. And Supernatural Realm runs Tuesdays and Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern at latenightinthemidlands.com. Plus, Kindness Beyond the Veil can be heard every Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on United Public Radio Network, which you can access at uprntalkradio.com. Archives of our previous shows also at uprntalkradio.com in their archive section, and they post to YouTube. So you can search Kindness Beyond the Veil on YouTube for those. And again, our wonderful and honored guest, Crystal Ann Compton, is moments away. But first, a couple of thoughts, both in her regard and regarding the energies this week. And in any given week, the planets align in ways that can be both complementary and contradictory. And for the most part, both are made clear. But sometimes the focus is more toward the negative, and that always troubles me. I've been pretty vocal about this whole Mercury retrograde thing because communication breakdowns happen all the time. But if we're told that breakdowns are prone to happen due to these retrogrades, people become more aware of them, even come to expect them so as to say, aha, Mercury retrograde. So when our prognosticators veer toward dread in the possibilities of current alignments, it's my belief they do more disservice to us than necessary. Now we have a full moon within a week's time in Libra, combined with Jupiter in retrograde and a few other things, where the common prediction is of a time yet again to be confronted with our faults, unlearned lessons, and what holds us back from our greatest possibility. When in reality, the only thing holding us back from our greatest possibility is us. And so giving us a chance to look toward any excuse to expect less just plain bothers me. Be honest with you about that. And the real good news that brings a good balance is something our guest today, Crystal Ann Compton, says in her teachings that especially impressed me, answering the question we ask of all of our experts here all the time, which is, why on our path to psychic or intuitive prowess do I hit a zone where clarity and confidence is spot on and then that zone disappears? Well, Crystal uses an example of these abilities that she terms in seasons, at least metaphorically speaking. And the season of winter may, at least in my mind, have the best answer of all. Which brings us to our first trip back in time. Perhaps the most well-known winter of them all, while also painting a picture to the extreme of how far we can let our self-doubts poison us. So walk with me here as we take a deep look at the winter of our discontent. Though really not at all how it sounds, the phrase, now is the winter of our discontent, comes from William Shakespeare. And yes, I can feel all the eye rolls when talking Shakespeare. Many of us find it hard to understand, but bear with me here. It comes from his play called Richard III in an opening monologue that speaks to the pernicious fury of the central character, which will accentuate the main point in this. Now, the play was written in 1593, some 107 years after the death of the actual King Richard III. And I'll share some of that monologue with you, but I'll spell out what it means. All right? The opening lines are all about a war that has just been won by the sitting king. And the winter of discontent means discontent is in its final days. All right? Walk with me here. Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this sun of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarms changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now instead of mounting barded steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lavish pleasing of a lute. All right. But the next passage marks my point. Richard III has marked deformities and feels or is separated from the normal people, not taken seriously. And it's the way he dwells on these inadequacies and how he reacts to them. All right. But I, that am not shaped for sportive tricks, nor made to court an amorous looking glass. I that am rudely stamped, and want love's majesty to strut before a wanting ambling nymph. I that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world, scarce half made up, and that so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them. Why, I, in this weak, peeping time of peace, have no delight to pass away the time, unless to spy my shadow in the sun and descent on my own deformity. And therefore, since I cannot prove a lover to entertain these fair, well-spoken days, I am determined to prove a villain and hate the idle pleasures of these days. Plots have I laid, inductions dangerous by drunken prophecies, libels, and dreams to set my brother Clarence and the king in deadly hate the one against the other. And if King Edward be as true and just as I am subtle, false, and treacherous, this day should Clarence closely be mewed up about a prophecy which says, gee, of Edward's heirs, the murderer shall be. Dive thoughts down to my soul. So not only did the real Richard III pin brother against brother, one of which was king, he also destroyed the rightful heir, a young child, who it was his duty now as Lord Protector to serve and protect. But no, he found a way to declare this child as illegitimate, claiming the child was born in bigamy, and they never saw the child again after that. And Richard III was ultimately crowned king in 1483. His own people tried twice to remove him with a civil war known as the War of the Roses. The first attempt, mostly by his own courtiers, feeding vital information to the resistance. The second attempt was successful, resulting in death in battle by the head of the resistance, a young Henry Tudor, who was crowned King Henry VII shortly thereafter, ending the Civil War, the War of the Roses, and even marking the official end of the Middle Ages. His son Henry VIII succeeded him, and Henry VIII's daughter Mary, known even to this day as Bloody Mary, lives on even in horror films and ghost lore, ultimately succeeded by her younger sister, Queen Elizabeth I. And the Shakespeare play Richard III wrote was with Queen Elizabeth I in mind. Now, I know people who are forced to live with chronic health conditions or acute health conditions or feeling separated or other than normal. And some of them want others to hurt as badly as they hurt. And some find relief in helping to heal others, heal them. So if our astrologer friends are right, and we may be forced to confront our weaknesses to finally move greatly forward, how will you handle it? If you can, please, keep love in your heart at all times and be forgiving of your inadequacies or impediments. There is a universal law of balance that can take whatever makes you feel less than normal, less than human, and create things within us that makes us super normal, superhuman. And our guest today, Crystal Ann Compton, can help us with that. Okay, one more brief trip back in time, or more food for thought today. And this time we take you to the year 1957 in New York City, marking the suspicious death of an Austrian psychiatrist named William Reich, a man who believed that love and wisdom was much more vital to our health than societal and religious dogmas. He thought that neurotic conditions were the result of people repressing their negative thoughts and emotions, keeping that negative energy locked within our bodies, even on a cellular level. He noticed, while monitoring a dying plant, that the plant actually released some unusual energy while dying. He also found that same energy found a way to reform and propel other life. He deeply continued research of that unusual energy and ultimately called it orgone, the life force, if you will, which in Eastern traditions had names like chi or prana. The Greeks called it ether. He also found that there is creative life force energy, or orgone, and destructive life force energy, or orgone, found ways to isolate the positive energy and exposed animals and people to it, creating a box that could store and rotate this positive force. He even saw it successful in reducing cancer cells in both animals and people. So in essence, using accessible energy to heal. Ultimately, the medical community, who made lots of money using the current system, saw Wilhelm Reich as a tremendous threat, deemed him as a fraud, ultimately imprisoned him as a fraud. And less than a week before he was due for parole, he died of a heart attack in prison, which was claimed as natural causes, but certainly suspicious. But his orgone energy was not seen as actual energy with mass. It's more of this force that had impact over energy with mass, even considered it traveling at speeds faster than light, since it was a force and not an energy. And since just this week we had reports from CERN in Geneva that they discovered by colliding strange subparticles called neutrinos together, found these neutrinos actually traveled at near 3 billionths of a second faster than light. We may have finally reached a time that the standard model of physics could be broken. Perhaps now they'll begin to consider life force as real and consciousness as an energy form or a force that belongs in the next standard model. Let's hope so. It would help psychic ability and paranormal occurrences become part of the scientific structure. And today we have a wonderful professional who is helping us improve our psychic ability, access to the interdimensional realms, and inspiring light workers across the globe to enlighten us today. So let's bring her on, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to our honored guest, Crystal Ann Compton, to Kindness Beyond the Veil. Hi, Crystal. Welcome to Kindness Beyond the Veil. How are you today?
Hi, Chip. I'm doing so well. That was so beautiful to listen to. It's going to be hard to follow up, really. Very inspiring.
Oh, no, this is the good part. we've just arrived here. I have to tell you that I may have mentioned this to you off air, but I have to say it out loud. I'm very impressed with your work. I really like and thank you for what you're doing to inspire other people and to help answer a lot of our own wants, needs, doubts, perhaps, to help people get a better grip on their intuitive or psychic abilities, or communicate with interdimensional things, whether they be the dead or angelic or whatever, even helping us to meet spirit guides. You know, that's a real question from a lot of our listenership. And we're very proud of our beloved listenership here, you know. They're just really amazing people. A lot of them do have their moments, you know, with the intuitive ability or psychic ability or something of that nature. Uh-huh. My dream is that most of them are light workers but don't know it yet. So it's wonderful we have you, especially with the Light Workers Lab. But of all these things to cover, I really wanted to start with a piece you did recently about seasons, which inspired me to do that whole thing about Richard III. Because I, you know, we've asked a lot of different people about, you know, why do I find myself so tuned in sometimes, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's gone. Is it my breath? What happened? But I thought your take was brilliant. So I wanted to start with that.
Okay.
Now, if I'm like one of my beloved listenership, you know, I guess I'll have to listen to the show now. I'm a little busy at the time, you know, but... And wow, you know, I have this day or two where I'm really tuned in, you know, and then all of a sudden it's gone. I haven't changed my diet. I haven't changed anything I did. I'm meditating. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, you know. What's up with that? And in terms of seasons, because I thought really your take on this is absolutely and stunningly brilliant.
Well, what's up with that? Well, there's so much up with that, not the least of which is that, you know, we live in this dimension, we live in this world, and I do believe we are shifting and we are transitioning, and there are higher frequencies that are entering into our experience. And as a result of that, we're impacted by that. We are energetic beings. Right. And so we are going to have the influx of these energies impact our energy. And so some days we're going to click in, we're going to be on, we're going to be super high vibration, and then other days, maybe not so much. However, what I like to do is just look at those times as opportunities, instead of saying, well, how come I'm disconnected, or what's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? Instead, say, okay, well, this is a quiet period. This is a time where I can actually do some of that inner work. And one of the main things I tell my students is, if you want to be intuitive or if you want to be psychic, that's great and that's fun and there's a lot to that, but it starts with doing your work and looking at your stuff And that's why we came here. And I think sometimes there's a bit of spiritual bypassing. Like we want to focus on all the cool signs and wonders, if you will, the clairvoyance, the mediumship. And we don't really want to look at the stuff that we carry around within us, which I call like the body within the body, you know, okay. Bodies really like patterns of energy. And this can come from trauma. This can come from experience. And we don't pay attention to how that's animating us. Mm-hmm. And so in the quiet season, if you want to call that winter or autumn or whatever season you're in, if you find that it's not that dynamic, that's your opportunity to really get introspective and insightful and look and see, where can I bring in the light in my own life and in my own experience? Because when we do that, here's the thing about spirit. Spirit wants to partner with us so that we can live the most dynamic and evidential life at this time. However, in order for spirit to fully do that with us or partner with us, spirit needs room to occupy. But if we're carrying around these, you know, burdens of our past patterns and experiences, which are animating us, well, where can spirit dwell? And so it's in those quiet times that we get to really look at the work, bring in the light, clear it out. And now here comes spirit occupying more fully. And we are having a more spiritually evidential life, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And on top of that, and to underscore the point that you made, the thing about the seasons, spring we think of as, you know, rebirth, if you will, new life. Summer, everybody's active and out there. So, you know, that might be the zoned in period. Autumn, we celebrate. Well, you said the harvest. I look at it with you. We actually have holidays that traditionally, I mean, not in current day, but I mean, historically speaking, celebrate the day, you know, in very special ways. Communities, all entire communities used to come together right around November 1st, even back in All Saints Day. They believed that the holy saints of the church would manifest on earth to help our lost loved ones find their way home if we were worried about them being stuck. So there is a lot of honor to the dead. And winter, you mentioned, is a period of hibernation. But what I really loved about it is you made a point that I never even thought of, and I've been, you know, doing this for a long time.
Me too.
but that, you know, if every day has all this magical, great stuff, then after a while, we won't come to appreciate how magical and great it is. We might even take it for granted, you know. So these breaks have to come. This hibernation period has to come. But you, really differently than anyone we've had here, points out that this is an opportunity to look inward, to examine the magical things that have happened, and to decide where you can take it from there, you know. And I really appreciated that.
Thank you. Yes, I think I actually stole that analogy from one of my good friends, Trisha Carr. She said, you know, having a baby is wonderful, but do you want to have a baby every single day? Having a beautiful wedding is wonderful. You plan a whole year to have this gorgeous affair, but can you do that every day? Of course not. It's exhausting. It's going to tap all your resources. And so you need to have that ebb and flow in order to have balance ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's so rarely put that way. And there is such a propensity for media in general to take any magic away from it.
Oh, sure.
You know, maybe you're just doing a poor job of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe you screwed up when you were connected. Must be your fault, your problem. That's kind of our medical system and mental health system anyway, you know. Yeah. If we have a mental illness, that's our fault and our problem, and our behavior is completely blamed on us. Indigenous societies don't say that. They'll attribute it to some spirit, but not a good or bad spirit.
Right.
Just one in the elements of the world that can be exercised. And they actually cure psychotic conditions in some of these indigenous tribes. You know, takes 27 years to have any improvement in a society like this. Right. So we can take that and carry it into how magical these times are when they are. And when they're not, it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. Right. It gives you the opportunity to examine this.
Yes.
You know, to examine ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to do that. And I take it all the way down to the finest point in my life. I try to remember to do that and be present. But if I'm even just having a reaction, if I find myself in traffic and I'm getting a little upset, or if I find myself being triggered in any way, I always try to, first of all, be in that observer position where I'm watching myself do what I do in this life. Mm-hmm. And when I catch myself in reaction, I try to stop and take a beat and see where that's coming from. Like, why is this making me so mad? Oh, yeah. My mom used to have terrible road rage, and it will take me back to a moment and back into a space where I can actually look at that and see what about that is causing me to be in this.
Right. Moment. Nature so, versus nurture, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah. And so even though you're in a, the problem is that a lot of us don't know that we should not indulge that negative reaction. We shouldn't stay mm-hmm. there longer than we need to. We really should only be in it long enough to observe it. So, because it's always, to me, it's always spirit giving us that opportunity to do that deeper work, because spirit would like to commingle the energy or to partner with us. Right. So in every area, if we are more aware and observant and in tune, it's going to help us to emerge into these different seasons. You know, and I love winter. Like I love fall, I love winter, but just being able to take a break for a little while, to stay indoors, to get under those blankets and to just chill out and check out what I'm going to do. And also plan for my upcoming year. Like, what am I going to do? What are my goals? What are my dreams about? I need that time in winter in order to prepare for what's to come. But if we're always just reacting, getting triggered, it's nuts out here, right? It's crazy out here. If we're always just in this perpetual state of chaos, well, we never get to that intentional space, which is what I think we're called to do.
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree. And hibernation is a good thing, you know. One of the biggest issues from the listenership that comes up when we encourage people to meditate, you know, and find their inner peace there is, oh, I don't have time during the day to meditate. I got 3 kids. I got 2 jobs. You know, I got to worry about this. I got bills. I'm taking care of everybody and don't have time. A lot of people will just say, well, make the time. But that just doesn't kind of hit it with them.
right.
You know, but it is always good to be reminded that hibernation is good. We're taking quiet time. It's good. If you can do it daily, that's awesome. Even if you don't think you can meditate, you can still find a happy place or take a walk in nature and stop and smell the roses, if you will, just to clear that noise from our minds.
Yes. And, you know, I go into really busy seasons of my life, and I'm just entering one right now. So the next 6 months are going to be nuts for me. And sometimes I can't get to like a Mondo 1 hour meditation where I'm oming with my crystal. You know, sometimes it's like a 3 second check-in, like, how am I feeling? What am I doing? Does this belong to me or does it not? Just trying to be present and get back into alignment. And that's sufficient. I think a lot of spiritual people place a lot of blame on themselves and also pressure when really we're just called to be and to be as perfectly in love as we can be. And that's it. Everything else comes from that. And when you actually started this program, you talked about light workers and being a light worker. And I believe like we're all that already, because mm-hmm. the light exists within us. You know, it's not something that we have to draw forth or somehow summon in order to become. We came in here being the light and bearing the light. The work just flows out of the light. And it's about finding out where the light is for you. And light to me is just another way of saying love. You know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. me, creator, that's love. Yeah. What do you love to do? What's your passion about? Like what turns you on, lights you up like a Christmas tree? Hanging out in that light, the work naturally flows from there. Now we become an intuitive reader, or now we become a healer, because we're occupying the fullness of our light. And everybody came here to do that. I'm not special. You're not special. That's just who we are. It's very natural to be psychic. It's very natural to be intuitive. I don't like to say that I'm gifted. Because I'm not. I'm just aligning. I'm fine-tuning my little radio knob all the time, as much as I can. I'm not perfect, so that I can get into that higher alignment, so that I can be that live wire that I want to be, so that I can be of service. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, what's it all for? Here I am, 50 years old, okay? I'm an old gal. When I was 20,
really? Wow, you look great.
Why, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. But, you know, when I'm 20, I have different goals for myself, for my life. But when you get older, you really do get very clear about like, what do you want to use your life for? Like, what are mm-hmm. you doing with your minutes? What are you doing with these people? What are you doing in this place? And I want everything to be really, really intentional. So that's where I come from. I believe we all have the power. I believe that we all came here to use it, but we just got to believe in ourselves first. We just got to know this about ourselves first. We can't do any of it in a sustained way unless we know exactly who it is that we are. And that is what I believe I've come here to talk about.
Yeah, and it's a very good message because it's one that we just don't hear enough. It's very hard to find anywhere in mass media or entertainment or, you know, or church or government or, you know, the school. I mean, pick one.
Right.
Where they say, well, yeah, you know, it's okay to be forgiving of yourself. You know, that's, you know, these challenges are what make you stronger. It's what gives you wisdom. So as you tread further down this path, you can help others.
Yes.
By having these experiences, by making these mistakes, by having these quirks or inadequacies or whatever. You know, we don't hear that often. And you mentioned very early on that how there's just a lot more energy now. I mean, our solar system literally is traveling through the rotation of the galaxy. So we're entering an area that is much higher energy than where we've been for like thousands of years.
Right.
And people just start feeling everything and they don't understand what's going on. And there's no influence to say, well, you know, it's here to make you more loving and more understanding of things. It's here to say, you're screwed. The world, right. The end of the world is coming. And, you know, and so I, for one, am very thankful that you're doing this work and getting that kind of word out, because it's something that needs to be heard and isn't heard enough.
I think that we came into an illusion, a seemingly disempowered landscape, but what we must remember is that we came in fully empowered, fully loaded. We had a backpack. We had a map. We know what we came here. We knew what we came here to do. It's just that this world is tricky, and I call it sticky. You get really stuck in the illusion of it and in the energy of it. And so the call here is to remember who it is that you are and remember the inherent power that comes along with that. Because what I hear so much from spiritual people is like, well, why did I come out of all this abuse? Why did these things happen to me? Why would I want to come into a life like this? And see, I could have the same kind of story, because I come up through tremendous abuse, tremendous trauma, and terrible, terrible poverty and hardship. And I could be to this day, like my father was, just spun out and reacting and being a free radical in this world. Or, and here's what I think. I think a lot of us who came up through that kind of stuff did so for such a time as this, because it was the experience of that. We transmuted that, didn't we? We came through it. We can look back and we can see what we learned, how we shifted. And now we have a whole world in front of us filled with all these people. Well, these people are just us pushed out, as Neville says. We're all one, but we have the skill set now, because of what we've been through, to truly help other people to understand, not to empower them. That's not my job to do that. My job is just to show you, you've got this inherent power already. Now what are you going to do with that? You're a creator, and you were created by a creator to create. So what are you creating? Let's get intentional. What do you want to create? Let's get intentional. That's exciting to me. Now, I started on YouTube. And I started years ago. Before that, I had this weird little comedy channel. I won't go into it. It was really silly. But I started on YouTube several years ago. And I was really interested in talking about these things like automatic writing or my experiences with angels and my experiences with spirit guides. But I've come to realize that that's what fascinates people. That's what people utilize in order to believe that there's something more than this chaotic, strange world that we live in. So they want to see the evidences of that all the time. But the real juiciness is figuring out that we are in the power position of our life. And I reference Christ a lot. And this is just because I come out of fundamentalist, nuts, evangelical Christianity. It's not because I'm an Orthodox Christian right now. I'm not. But Christ said it. He said, seek first the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of spirit, the kingdom of God. And all these things are added unto you. You don't have to worry about your bank account. You don't have to worry about how is this going to work out. You don't have to worry about, can I open my third eye? This is all natural. It happens when you click into position with the kingdom of God, if you will, which is just source energy. And so that's where I want to get people to get, because we can all do that. We all have a spirit within us that allows us to do that. We just have to know that. And if we don't, that's the problem.
Mm. Yeah. And boy, there's like 18 different places I could go based on what you just said. So I got to think of one. I'm going to use Richard III, the reason that I used that example, and I don't like reading Shakespeare on this program. It's not the first time I've done it. Sometimes William Wordsworth or something, but But here's a guy I can't think of as psychopathic or sociopathic, you know. I think that he was so focused on his own inadequacies, quirks, inabilities, disabilities. One thing to be separated from your community is that, but he took it to the next level by utilizing that to set forth a path of hatred, you know. And I think sometimes in abusive situations, the abuser comes from that same place. They are so unhappy with their own selves that they have to enhance their power over others or remove free will from someone else in order to feel a bit stronger. But on the other side of this, and some of the things that you're talking about, you know, coming from a background of abuse and poverty and all these things, you've learned over time that it's given you the wisdom to help other people. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the reason for this path and your strengths to climb out of that situation with that clarity and that heartfelt goal is a very admirable thing. You know, I think I'm one of the few people I know that does not come from an abusive household. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's odd because they're usually the ones that come to me for advice. You know, I can try my best to empathize with them, but I can't heartfeltly answer their questions, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
So there is that. But I used Richard III as an example of, because sometimes people take their challenges and they say, well, if I'm going to have challenges, I'm going to make everybody else feel bad. But, you know. And yet others end up like you or like myself, where we're almost propelled to heal other people. It gives us some healing, too. It's not a selfish thing, though. It's a kind of thing that we have gained the wisdom over time to share with others.
Absolutely. And
bring about a sense of community. And that's what you're doing with the Lightworkers Lab. Because if Richard III had some sort of community, if he had like a leper group or something, a hunchback scoliosis group to, you know, maybe he wouldn't be killing his family, you know?
Maybe. Well, you know, I'm from Hawaii. I was born and raised in Hawaii, where we have that leper colony. So you're talking some stuff I know about. Visiting your pain upon others versus transmuting it and turning it into something that's helpful and something that's good is so powerful. And I think I think it's hard for people because of the world that we live in. It's hard because of the way they're thinking. It's hard because of what's being programmed into their consciousness, into their awareness. They're just running these narratives, running these loops, and they're not even aware of it because we're not popped out again in this observer position. And then when we're running these thoughts and we're thinking these things and, oh, this looks crazy out here and what's going on over here and who's this person, we get angry as well. Now we have a partnering feeling that goes along with this thought, that this reactive thought that we're not paying attention to, that we're indulging. And it's when that frequency of feeling couples itself with the consciousness of thought that we begin to create. And what people need to realize ASAP is that they are always creating. They're always creating. They're creating their next day today. They're creating their next week this week. And so if we become intentional about it now and pay attention to what it is that we're actually thinking and then what we're saying and feeling, this is how we actually shift the life. And one way to do this, even though it seems like this is an onslaught of the ego monkey mind, is to change just the way that you talk. Change the way you're programming yourself through your own language, because as a man speaks, so he is. And so if the things that are coming out of your mouth about yourself are negative, guess what? That's going to inform who it is that you are. One thing I also always tell my students is that your body, the instrument of your body, is always listening to what the mind is saying. And it's always listening to what the mouth is saying. But the thing that makes it interesting is that the body is not a passive listener. The body is here with you, right? Mm-hmm. And taking you around on this journey. When the body hears these things, the body actually takes this as a directive. And so when I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm like, oh, I'm looking old today. I'm looking fat today, or I'm in a bad mood today. My body is not just passively observing that. My body then goes, okay, we're manifesting that. We're creating that because I'm thinking it, I'm feeling it, I'm saying that. And so I create my own reality. And so that's where the power position comes in. And while that's bad news if it's out of control and we're not paying attention to it. It's awfully good news as soon as we understand that we can control it. We can control the way we think. We can control the way we treat one another. We can control the way we envision one another. Just the way that I think about you with love in my heart, that changes the dynamic, not just between me and you, but on this whole planet. That's how powerful we are. I'm sorry. Don't, you got me started. I start.
No, going, no, no, no. Well, that's what I'm here for.
It starts with you. It starts with me. And we can do it. It's not some grand thing that we're trying to aspire to. It has to start within us. And so we have to be aware of these things that we're doing to create it.
Yeah. And there's two specific things that I wanted to bring up. I'm going to bring them both up at the same time so I don't forget as I go along. one is, excuse, got a cough there. My beautiful wife, okay, comes from an abusive household. Mm-hmm. She does not have one here. She is coveted here, you know. She is cherished here. She is the head of the family here. And everything I know is wrong and my fault, and I'm fine with that because, you know, she deserves this kind of treatment to make up for all the treatment that she's had before. In my heart and mind, she is an oracle, all right? I think she's more psychic than I am, and I've been kind of a professional one for a long time. But she's got not only the women's intuition, but she has this kind of, you talk about objective, you know, zooming out from 400,000 feet, she's got that. But there's times, and I feel a little helpless to do much about that. It's something that even she says, you know, it's hers to straighten out, that those voices return. Even when things are going great, the voices come back that say you'll never amount to anything. You know, you were never meant to amount to anything. You're no good. You're a failure. You know, and there's not much, especially not coming from a background of abuse. All I can do is, you know, give her the love. And she, I think, has to work that out herself. So that's example one. Okay. Right? Example two is I'm very concerned about people that I see on social media. Mm-hmm. Whose lives are not really going well, or it's one step forward, two steps back over and over again, or just when they get going, something just completely halts their path or whatever, that they attribute for some reason to some attachment or entity that is demonic or negative. Mm-hmm. Maybe that comes from a dogmatic belief, you know, but they are taking their own power away from themselves by putting it to some invisible thing they're not even sure about, which stops them from improvement in their track. So those are the two my concerns that I wanted to ask you.
Okay. Well, with regard to your wife, having these thoughts that creep in, no matter how spiritual she is, no matter, you know, how zoomed out she is, I say good. Because here again, this is the opportunity. For each thought, there is a thread. And for each thread, there is a pattern. And so it, instead of feeling like, oh, here are these thoughts again, why can't I get out of this spiral? Instead, to take that beat and try to figure out where that's coming from. And then when you can figure out where it's coming from, it's because my mom had road rage for so many years, and that's why I'm angry right now in this moment. Then what we do is we actually do a little time traveling, and it's really cool because, of course, outside of this dimension, there is no time. So mm-hmm. can actually go back into the moment where I'm sitting there with my mom in the car, and I can reimagine that. I can actually reimagine that and shift it and change it. And I can reimagine her being in peace. I can reimagine us having a wonderful conversation, and or I can just locate myself in that moment and love myself a little bit. I was just a kid. My mom's flipping out. I'm scared. What's going on? We're going at 70 miles an hour down the highway and she's screaming, where's Crystal? What's she thinking? And I can bring the love just into that moment in order to integrate Crystal back into me. And I've done that many times with my abuse, and my abuse was I mean, all abuse is bad. I mean, people who are victims of abuse, we tend to talk on the spectrum. Oh, it wasn't that bad. He just smacked me around. And then there's, you know, this other end of the spectrum, which is monstrosity. Mm-hmm. All abuse is bad. But I've done a lot of this type of timeline work where I just use those opportunities. And, you know, I get depressed. Like I was probably depressed for 2 months straight, December and January. And it's the sticky nature of it that causes us to stay there longer than we need to. What we ought to be doing is just using that opportunity that winter to look at. Is spirit really bubbling it to the surface? Oh, I'm aware of it. I can look at it. If I wasn't aware of it, I couldn't heal it. So it's that opportunity again. Now, with regard to social media and this externalization, oh, there's a big bad devil out there that's causing these problems for me. This is, again, coming from that disempowered space. Now, I mean, we could talk a little bit about demons and we could talk about negative entities. I mean, I do believe that they are real, but I think that these are for them. Well, we're getting in tricky territory because I don't think I've come to a conclusion about the demonic, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, me neither. It hasn't been my personal path. You know, I've been kind of pulled into this kind of an old age. 21 years old, my best friend through childhood came to me at the moment of his death, you know, and that was a long time ago, and nobody talked about death that way. So I've been looking into, like, afterlife sciences and spirit, but I've never had, personally, a negative encounter with any kind of earthbound or crossed over spirit or even energies that attacked people 5 minutes after I was done with them. We had laughs and we, you know, I mean, and maybe it's part of some sort of belief system. It is tricky.
Well, I've actually been attacked, so I can speak to that. I just wouldn't call it a demon necessarily. I would call it a shadow being. That's different. But I think that what people, to your point, I think what people are experiencing is just their projected shadow in different things. Also their fear that they bring into the interaction. So I'm going to hang out and play with my pendulum and see what kind of spirit guide I can talk to. But I'm also low-key afraid about this. I'm also scared about what might come through. Yeah, I'm really interested to meet my spirit guide, but that fear is a very strong signal and it transmits. And so if we're doing something like divination or we're trying to speak in the world of spirit, but we're also fearful, then we do open up ourselves to some degree.
Because that's what we're projecting.
That's the match.
You know, I'm not a law of attraction guy, especially because they use it in such a way that all you have to do is sit on your couch and believe it's already happened and wow, there it is. No, do the work, you know. But at the same time, I've seen it on both paranormal and in a mediumistic kind of situations where the person themselves, where's this energy, this auric field, if you will, the electromagnetics around them, you know, because it comes mostly from the heart, you know. A lot of people think the all the electricity's in the brain with synapses firing and all that liquid, but it's actually from the heart. So we literally wearing our heart in our energy. And if they walk into a setting believing that they'll probably be confronted by something negative, that's, you know, it's part of it is a self-fulfilling prophecy belief system. They won't believe it until it confirms their belief, or they're actually presenting and projecting the kind of energy that would attract something like that.
Yes, well, that's the nature of energy anyway, and you have to kind of understand that, and you are going to attract out in these spiritual streets energies that are a match for you. And I tell my students sometimes who are dealing with fear, well, like if you're walking down a street late at night, say it's midnight, and you walk across an alleyway, and there's a guy in there, and he's waiting to jump somebody, but you're walking strong, you're walking tall, maybe you've got a bat, and then there's somebody about 20 feet behind you also walking down that street, but she's kind of hunkered over. She's looking around. She's like, this is bull. I got to get out of here. Which one of those two people do you think that person in the alleyway is going to try and jump?
Well, the one that projects weakness. It's an easier prey. Yeah.
That's right. So you move through all of this by just understanding that you don't have to be afraid. Like, you never have to be afraid. And this was a hard lesson for me to learn because I was a very psychic child. I could see spirits. I could see energies. I was very clairaudient. I was talking to nature spirits. It was awesome. I also was born to two parents who were very psychic as well. They were very messed up, but super psychic. And so when I went to them and I said, well, mom, dad, I'm talking to a Mr. Tumnus hybrid out in my tree. They just, my dad was from Hawaii, born and raised, and he just talked to me about what a nature spirit was. So I was really blessed to have parents who could contextualize as opposed to say, well, that's a demon. However, because of the abuse, at some point I did get sucked into fundamentalist type Christianity. I was just kind of looking for a father, like just looking for some stability, if you will. And then all of those gifts that I had were suddenly demonic. all of those very natural interactions mm-hmm. that I had with spirits and energy and just like being with it, like not afraid, just being with it, being one with it. I was now told, well, this is demonic. Those are demons. And so I spent probably 10 to 12 years in that system of thought. Mm. And at some point, we won't get into it because it's a whole long drawn out Oprah. I got out of it though. But for a period of a couple of years, I still carried that fear in me. I wanted to return to that very natural state of being intuitive that I remembered as a child, but I was a little bit locked up in all of this indoctrination that I had gone through. And so one night I was in bed and I was starting to read about Edgar Cayce. I was a little fearful about it, but it was so intriguing, interesting. I was starting to open up, starting to meditate a little bit, and I was attacked in my bed. I was awake and I felt just this kind of like the old hag sort of a story, but although I didn't see an old hag, I just felt a pressure on my chest bearing down. I looked and I saw this entity. It had one eye. It freaked me the F out. I immediately just started losing my stuff. And it started to confirm in my mind, oh, it's absolutely demonic. All of this is so demonic. And this is what's happening. But at some point in this grappling experience with this being, well, I got mad. It's like, at some point, you kind of have to push through that fear where you're just being victimized by whoever it is or whatever it is and get to the other side of that. No, 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 no. This is my bed. This is my house. This is my body. I am sovereign here. Who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, the being receded. And I noticed that. I noticed mm-hmm. that. I was angry at this type of a breach. And it's not the anger necessarily. It was the conscious awareness of, no, this is mine and I'm in control of this and you can't be here now. Immediately, this being went away. That's the kind of power we have. And again, referencing my old paradigm, and this is what Jesus was working with all the time. He's talking to this guy over here who's got riddled with demons and he tells those demons, get out of this boy. Now, do the demons have a long conversation about this? Well, let me see. I have to talk to somebody else. I don't know if you have the authority to tell me. No, the demons just get the heck out of the boy. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens as well when Christ is occupying his energy walking down a street and the woman reaches out, touches the hem of his garment. She's healed of a lifelong issue. He's occupying his power all the time. And Christ said, greater things than I do, will you do? Way greater things can you do. And I believe that about myself. I believe that about people. I want people to believe that about themselves too. There's nothing to fear.
Yeah. But it's also an example of you ultimately fixing this on your own.
Yeah.
You know, you've pulled yourself out of abusive cycles. You pulled yourself out of this situation and realized and came to realize what a lot of people still don't realize is that the living have all the power.
Yes.
There is much greater energy in living energy than spirit energy.
Yes.
You know, so we can set the boundaries, you know, we can set the standards.
Absolutely. I like to say the consciousness having the experience is sovereign in that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the creator of my experience. I do believe that. And so I'm sovereign in this experience. I can do what I want. I can say what I want. I mean, there's going to be consequences. There's always going to be a reaction to it. But I'm here and I'm sovereign in it. And that's where the power comes in. And that's where I feel people are disempowered in their lives, with their money, with their jobs, with their 9-to-5s, with their marriages, but also in their spirituality. They're not coming into so many people come into spirituality just deferential, beggar. I'm a beggar. Please, God, if you would just give me this one thing, I'll do this X, Y, and Z. No, we come to that interaction as an equal because that's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are the creators of our life. And if we can shift our awareness around that, that's when things start really shifting in our life.
Yeah. Everybody that I've met who came into spirituality of some kind, whether, you know, faith-based or spirituality-based, didn't come there from a happy spot, you know. You don't see happy people going, hey, today I'm going to pray, you know. But it opens us up to I guess the 5D world, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Because there is divinity in that 5D. There is spirituality in that 5D. Spirit, you know, interdimensional beings, you know, some of which you talk about in your work, and But I'm gonna hit you with a weird segue now.
Okay.
Because when we're talking about our personal power, and I think part of the reason that I've never had a negative encounter is I don't believe that this lifetime is for that. This is a lifetime where I'm seeing the one side of things so I can help others see that side, because, you know, nobody on TV talks about it.
Right.
You know, it's always negative and sucking your life force and pushing you downstairs and
right.
all this stuff, you know. But at the same time, I have this firm belief that my spirit guides, I have 9 at present, mm-hmm. you know, are so powerful mm-hmm. that even when I am particularly weak or self-doubting or self-punishing, you know, they still have my back. Nothing can enter this household, this body, my family, anything near me, anywhere I go, without the guides allowing it to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that's it. And here's the weird segue. Okay. Because you do pieces about meeting spirit guides, and you know, I get asked this all the time. So, and I'd really love your personal take, without, you know, giving the milk away for free or whatever, about... You know, a good way to meet one spirit guide, because a lot of people say, well, I tried, I just can't get it, or I can't get a name, or I can't make it out. And then I start downing the whole process and boom, I just give up. So,
okay.
For them.
Well, first I would say, get right with the reality that imagination is just as real as this physical materiality in which we exist. Mm-hmm. And so when we go into the workshop of our mind and our imaginal mind, if you will, and we prepare a space to have an encounter, and then we allow the mind or the imagination to bring forth some sort of a rendezvous with a being, we can't just discount it because it's happening in our imagination. See, a lot of people are waiting for an angel to descend from the heavens and stand before them and say, behold, I am Gabriel, your spirit guide. Well, for the most part, that doesn't happen. It's not that it can't happen. It's just for the most part, it doesn't. It mostly happens in these subtler ways. And in the imagination, it can be quite subtle. So in order to meet your spirit guide, first of all, you want to have the intention to do so. Again, rooting out any fear, because there's no fear here. They are our friends. They are our partners. Have the intention. And then create the chamber in which to have the interaction. This would be done through meditation. This would be done just by allowing yourself to have something called active imagination, where it's not necessarily meditation. You're more aware than that, but the imagination is flowing. And then see what spirit brings forth. Because the thing about spirit is, if we open the door, if we say, I want to have this deeper communion, I want to have this deeper understanding, or show me, reveal yourself to me, spirit always will. It's us that talks ourselves out of these various encounters. It's us that says, oh, well, I just saw 11/11/17 times today, but that cat's got to be a coincidence.
Yeah, right.
It's us that yeah. like, look at all these things that spirit's constantly doing to get our attention, and we discount it and we don't give it any merit. And so to meet your spirit guides, you got to want to, you got to be open. You've also got to be observant, because with spirit, especially in the beginning, they like to deposit information, energy on the periphery of your life, because mm-hmm. spirit never wants to barge in and just smack you around and say, listen, we got to go this way. No, this is a free will dimension. Mm-hmm. Spirit instead kind of taps you on your shoulder and says, hey, what about this? Or, hey, what do you think about that? And offers these other subtle types of things. But if we're not paying attention to what's happening on the outskirts of our lives, we miss so much. For example, I've asked a question out loud to spirit. Okay, spirit, I need the solution to this problem. But then I move into observation for the next few days, maybe a couple of weeks. I'm looking at my environment to see where spirit's going to put that answer. And sometimes it's in a coffee shop. Somebody's having a conversation 3 tables away, and they're talking about the exact thing that I was just asking spirit about. But if I'm not listening, then I'm not going to get that answer. Same with spirit guides. If we ask them to introduce themselves to us, or if we ask them for the interaction, we also have to pay attention, because they're different. Some mm-hmm. of us have nature guides, feel very different than angelic guides, which feel very different than mm-hmm. Pleiadians or other types of guides. And if we're not paying attention to energy, if we're not paying attention to what's happening in the space, we're going to miss them. And so intention, observation, and then not discounting what comes through, trusting it. And then if we get a prompt from them, for example, if we have a dream about a spirit guide, or in our imaginal chamber, in our workspace, we have an encounter with a monk or a cloaked being who gives us a message, well, by God, listen to that. Giving you a message, if he's trying to interact with you, lean into that and engage that. This is a partnership, and then see where it takes you. It's actually much more simpler and a lot less mystical, if you will, than people make it out to be. It's a lot easier to make contact with your spirit guides if you're not talking yourself out of the experience the entire time.
Right. And again, there's not enough people that are saying that out loud like you're saying it. And to underscore a couple of the things that you said, one is the subtle things, you know. We call them affirmations, and a lot of people don't know about affirmations, you know. People can be in deep grief over the loss of a loved one and say, you know, I pray about them, I think about them all the time, and they, you know, I'll never speak with them again, I'll never hear from them again, they're gone forever. And it's like, no, those subtle things, like the spirit guides in your example, you might find a feather on the ground that wasn't there before, or a penny, or you might find something of theirs, a memento that you own, that was not in the place where you last put it. You know, these little things, or the numbers on the clock, especially digital clocks, are good. And I also wanted to underscore something that you not only said here, but I've seen you mention several times in your work, because I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, okay? And when you talk about imagination being a part of a reality, see, and I'll give one of those secrets away, you know, I don't care. The subconscious mind is a very peculiar instrument. I'm not going to get too far into that, but underscore what you said by saying, if I were to ask you to close your eyes and imagine yourself on a beach, and then, you know, picture that, and to feel this calm breeze on your face, this little cool breeze going against a hot, hot day. Hear the sounds of seagulls or children playing behind you. Taste the salty air from the ocean. You know, if once you get all your senses involved, the brain and the subconscious mind doesn't recognize it as any different from a awakening reality.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that we can do to make our imagination a reality that makes it more realistic than saying, oh, yeah, sure, I'll just be creative and that's it. Nah, you know, because, again, people aren't talking about this sort of thing. Yeah. They're not able to hear it. And that's why, again, I'm so glad you're doing this work and really so thankful.
Thank you. Yes. I mean, I think that too many of us, our expectations are getting in the way of what we think the world of spirit ought to look like versus like what it actually is and how symbiotic it is with who it is we are and what our life looks like. And we're going to the Starbucks, but guess what? Spirit's going with us and things are happening and there's serendipity and there's people and there's all these opportunities, but we have to be coming into that interaction from a conscious place and from an aware place in order to really engage with that phenomena or engage with the different things that spirit is doing for us. But I definitely want to also agree that we all have spirit guides. I mean, I don't know what your particular philosophy about this is, but I mean, we all have at least one. Most of us have at least five, and some of us, you know, are coming into the room with a whole bunch of other beings. But we all have these infinite resources, and that's exactly what they are. They are resources for us, and they literally delight in being able to help us.
Yeah, they're unconditional loving. I mean, they're there for you specifically.
Then they delight in being activated toward a purpose. For example, I would like my spirit guides to be activated toward the purpose of, you know, I need to make this connection. I've got to walk through this door. I've got to meet this kind of a person. We can actually task our workforce, if you will, with different things. And they delight in being able to do that for us. But we don't do that because we don't know that we can and that they're there.
Yeah.
So.
And another thing, I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine, been a very good psychic for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you will. So somebody who underestimates their ability rather than overestimate. We've all met a few psychics or mediums that have a great overestimation of their ability. But, you know, then there's also those who greatly underestimate their ability. Now they've come into this different place in their life. There was a health challenge that almost gave them some clarity that they didn't have before then. And now they're sensing that they might have new spirit guides and for some reason are very disconcerted by that. Why would I have a new guide now? And it's like, well, guides come in for a reason. I mean, the further we go up this ladder in our path to ascension or our path to clarity, different things come up or the field stretches. So you need perhaps a different guide to take you in this new direction. So you don't have to be disconcerted or afraid or off put by this. This is fantastic
news. It's wonderful. Yeah. I believe we have lifetime guides. These are guides that come into this life with us. They're walking the path with us. They're our guardians, if you will. But then we have these situational guides who come in for seasons. We need to up level to this understanding, or we need to be able to acquire this particular skill set. And so here comes in a guide who can help us to do that. And then when we've attained it, they cycle out and mahalo. Thank you so very much. And we hit the next level. And now we've got access to all these other guides who can help us on that level as well. We just need to be open to the fact that there's always these resources there. There's nothing frightening about it. It's wonderful.
Yeah. See, in my personal opinion, I believe this is my final lifetime, at least here. Maybe perhaps I'll be a spirit guide and going forward, or become at one with this purity of light, this divine light, to the infinite. I don't know if my path is finished yet, but I do believe that it's finished here on this planet. I could be wrong about that, it depends on who I am.
Well, I'm just looking at Timothy. He's shaking his head no.
Yeah, I know. Well, Tim doesn't want me to leave. Tim loves me. It's like, no, Chip, when I come back, you can co-host with me on a show or something.
My mom passed in 2012, and she was like, oh, please let this be my last go around on this wheel because I'm over it. But I think something happens on the other side where we become convinced for some reason to do it again. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people do. I hope it's my last time. Or like, can I spend some time on just a really cool, chill planet for a little while?
With
fires and like just having fun.
Just
like,
for a couple of incarnations, please.
Like,
yeah.
Can we get over these problems and then I'll come back? Like, it would settle down a little bit because I'm tired. Yeah. But I know we came here. We came here to be way showers during this transitional time.
True.
That's why.
And I know in this lifetime, and we both are. But I don't believe in my lifetime. I mean, I'm 60 now. Uh-huh. So, I'm not in the December of my years, but maybe October, I mean, it's not like 50 years from now I'm going to be around. And if I am, I'm going to be really mad because, it hurts to be 60. If I'm 110, boy, how sore am I going to be? But at the same time, when we talk about the ascension or the planet, which you mentioned very early on, coming into this new energy, almost like we're going from a third to a fourth density planetarily. Mm-hmm. And the way showers, if you will, have to set the standard to a more loving and communal and compassionate society in order to remain alive. I'm very concerned that they're messing with genetics now. It won't be too long before you can pick what kind of attributes your kids have. So in essence, we could be the last generations of modern Homo sapiens created by nature ever. So somebody's got to do something good before they leave a good legacy behind and take people in from this fearful, distrusting, angry, warful, destructive society into one that is geared to survive through love, through light, through service to others and the greater good. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Do you know who David Hawkins is? He wrote The Eye of the Eye and Power versus Force. Anyway, he would calibrate everything. Like, he calibrated the energy of Jesus versus Buddha. He calibrated the energy of the U.S. versus Africa. Like, he calibrated everything. Mm-hmm. And he was able to assign a number to different things. And so we could know how enlightened a thing was. And that's neither here nor there. But in his calibrations, he determined, and he talks about this in Power versus Force, that we've actually tipped over. And I know it doesn't feel like it, but we've tipped over in terms of enlightenment to the other side. There are more of us now mm-hmm. that understand that feelingly exist. That doesn't mean they don't have maybe not the head knowledge or the education or this or that, but they feelingly.
But they know. Yeah.
They know. And it's actually a much more optimistic than we tend to think. And if you just look at the material world, well, you're thinking that's true. It's not true. That's Maya. You've got to come back into the heart to see what's really true. And his supposition was that we're too far gone into enlightenment to ever go back. I mean, barring some sort of a catastrophic sort of a thing,
of course,
in terms of consciousness, to ever go back and to regress to that degree. And I like to believe that, but I also just ascribe to the reality that I can only do what I can do, and I can only do it in the way that I came here to do it. And as way showers, It's about education. It's about letting people know it's possible, but it's also about just holding an energy. Mm-hmm. In A Course in Miracles, there's a beautiful passage that says, "I've come into this room to bless this room. There is no other reason for me to be here." Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. Am I doing that? And everybody can do that. And that's the powerful part. Like, we can all come into the Starbucks. We can all come into our workplace. We can all come into our relationship with our husband, our children, to bless it. There's no other reason to be here but to do that. And if we can all just focus on doing that in our way, in our lives, we ship the whole thing. And and it's witnessed. And the reverberating effect of it, like, when was it? In November, we had a big meditation and the whole earth rang like a bell, right? Remember?
Yeah.
That's the power of what we can do when we intentionally set our heart to something. I didn't say mind. I said our heart. That's where our power is.
No, it was the 11-11-11 gateway, because it was 11 year last year, and that was the big thing. And yeah, collective. See, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, because to me, you know, and I'm very rare in that. I'm the only person I know that's not.
Right.
But to me, a conspiracy is a bunch of selfish-minded people grouping together to do a collectively selfish thing. But if you're dealing with selfish-minded people, it's going to break apart somehow. Somebody's going to screw up because there's too much selfishness there. But a collective consciousness belief, on the other hand, is getting several people who are, let's say, unbiased,
yes,
to join in on one thing that doesn't take away too much of their energy or their time, that they'll say, okay, sure, I'll wish happy things for the world for 10 seconds, you know? Mm-hmm. And it really makes a difference. Also, though, and part of the thing about demons that you talked about before, well, there's been a collective conscious belief about them before, you know, prehistory, really.
Yep.
You know, ghosts have been believed in by prehistoric man, you know, the Neanderthal, if you will. I don't think they call them that anymore, but pre-modern Homo sapien had that kind of belief. They had the belief that there was some sort of afterlife, and there's proof of that, archaeologically speaking. The indigenous beliefs, you know, far exceed the organized ones by thousands of years. And all of those are still in the ether, if you will.
Of course.
And all accessible to. So the more open we are and the more loving our purpose, the more that we get to see. It's a beautiful thing. And your friend may be right, because we're seeing star seeds, indigo children, you know, earth angels, if you will. I've got a guest next week, since I didn't do it in the intro. Her name is Susie Miller. I think you'd like her. She's got a program. She works with autistic children, but her program is called Awesomism.
I love it.
Because what she's doing is she's removing the stigma and the label. I've got a buddy, one of my best friends, has two grandchildren that had been diagnosed from age 2. I mean, that's a losing hand from the get-go. How dare they, right? But to Susie Miller here, they are in a higher plane altogether. So normal everyday talk about the weather or sports or mathematics or is just not enticing to them, because their minds are so in such a higher plane or higher state altogether.
I believe that.
They would fit more into a starseed category, you know, than an autistic category. And shaming us for labeling people and put, you know, making them separate, you know,
right,
in the first place. Right. So I just wanted to say that, you know, and we see more cases of the autism spectrum that are diagnosed now in the last 50 years than ever before.
I know it.
And then they branch it out into attention deficit disorder. We used to call that boredom when I was a kid. Manic depressive disorder. We used to call that moodiness, you know. I mean, it's like, come on now. Our poor men and women who gave service to our nation, or whatever nation that is listening, you know, still has brave heroes that sacrificed on behalf of their nation. You know, back when I was a kid, they called it shell shock. When they come back and they, you know, they're living, it sounds like they earned it, you know. Now it's post-traumatic stress disorder, you know. Right. They had to get that disorder in there.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing that says not only is there something wrong with you, but you're different than everyone else now.
Right, you're disadvantaged in some way.
Takes me back to Richard III. And how does that help them, you know, move past this thing, right, which they're fully capable of doing? But, you know, even the people that love them say, snap out of it. Or, you know, right, gee, we think you'd be done with this by now.
Right.
You know, and we're not geared to be helpful in that sense. And that's another reason why I like the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Because it removes labels and stigmas and makes everybody on an equal plane for this wondrous opportunity, and making people aware of things they might not be aware of. The affirmations,
yes,
you know, the spirit guides, using the creative mind can solve a lot of things, or at least distract you from. I mean, even in Freudian psychoanalysis, the most mature defense mechanism was writing a song in order to get the heartbreak out of your system, or writing a poem or a book, or using creative means.
Yes.
Or if you don't feel creative, listening to music that you like, or reading books that you like, or listening to radio shows like Kindness Beyond the Veil, you know, which can bring comfort to you, because even on a cellular level, it starts the healing process.
Absolutely. Well, creative to me comes from creation. It comes from creator. And when I'm being creative, I mean, and I'm not talking about being creative so I can sell something. But when I'm just vibing in a zone, maybe singing, which I love to do, maybe intuitive movement, which I love to do, and I'm just feeling creative in that, what I'm really doing is I'm hanging out with source energy. And the thing about energy is the stronger energy always makes a more substantial change to the lesser energy in terms of divine energy. Like the lesser energy has to adjust to the stronger signature of the divine energy. And so when we're hanging out creatively with source energy, what we're really doing is opening up a portal that allows us to be changed and calibrated to the level of source energy. And now we've opened up our experience. And what happens is when we are aligning to source energy, when we're being creative, when we are being the creator of our life, all the attributes of creator, of source energy, start to show up here again, very effortlessly. For example, health and abundance, but also peace and inspiration and joy. And that's the kind of thing that people need now more than ever. And I really liked when you opened this show because you talked about Mercury retrograde. I don't know a whole lot about astrology. I have a great friend who's all into it. I'm like, I don't know what, it sounds like math to me. But I will say, when somebody puts up a meme about Mercury retrograde, there goes my heart. It just sinks. And now we're collectively creating an experience. Now you've just put a thought into my consciousness, and now I am co-creating with it. Now I'm looking for ways that Mercury retrograde is going to start messing me up. Well, what if we did it a little differently? What if the things that we put out and offered through our being, through our words, through our lives, were edifying? We're lovely, we're beautiful, or we're thoughtful. I mean, and somebody could partner with that, and somebody could co-create with that. That's the challenge, I think, for us, but it's simple.
Yeah.
And I think when people talk about, oh, being a way shower, you know, I'm going to be a light worker, they think it's this lofty thing, and it's really not. It's a very simple thing. And it starts with figuring out for you where the light is in your life. And this is what Joseph Campbell talked about when he said, follow your bliss. And this is what Bashar is talking about when he's saying, follow your highest excitement. What is it that gets you going? What is it that turns you on? Just do that more, because that's the vibration. Mm-hmm. That's the light. And if you can immerse yourself in it, even if it's mundane, that's okay. If it feels good, if it feels high vibration, if you can immerse yourself in it, you can begin to sustain it. Now, when you sustain it, now you're cooking with gas, because you're transmitting it in an elongated way. I'm walking into my various experiences and I'm high vibration. I'm being the blessing in the room, if you will. But I can't do that if I don't know what lights me up, if I haven't taken the time in the winter of my life to figure out, where's my joy at? Like, what do I really want to do? What makes me smile? What makes me laugh? What moves me? If I don't know that, then I can't hook into it enough to sustain it.
Right. I'm older now, so I will use our friends in their youth as an example of a generation that feels like, they won't have the same opportunities to make the same kind of money or have the same kind of living than their parents did or their grandparents before them. So here we are in a generation full of people, and this is overgeneralizing, so I will say that, because everybody's different, right? But I see a lot of folks that feel like they got a losing card from the get-go. Why even bother trying? Some come to a sense of this self-entitlement that is more worthy of anything, any effort they put in. But at the same time, and based on what you're saying, the reality is this is the time to think outside the box in order to find something fruitful in your life. Give yourself a hobby or a career that brings joy to you, that brings love to you, that brings a sense of balance to you. You know, this show for me is it's imperative. It's my, you know, and it's not, I don't want to be famous, because, you know, they treat famous people horribly. But I have an opportunity to surround myself with the most brilliant friends who have inspired me, who have changed the way that I thought, who have improved my sense of all these nether realms and the path to ascension and healing and extraterrestrials and ghosts and all these things, angel, that I get to bring it to listeners who want to hear it. People have been walking around with their heads down. They're unsettled. They don't know what truth is. And yet, every week, you know, you can say something that you said the week before, but this week you'll be blamed and, you know, dare you say that? Yeah. Well, I said it last week and nobody, but, you know, so there's all this unsettled. But at the same time, like you said, there is such higher vibrational energy that is available to us, as long as you know it's available and you find a path in your heart that says, you know what, I am just going to be blank and feel this. Let this take it in and find something creative in your example, mm-hmm. that builds your heart up, mm-hmm. so you can feel better about yourself. You can be less judgmental about yourself. You can be less egotistical. Mm-hmm. Or critical or judgmental about things, because there's that inner peace, and that inner peace becomes outer peace. Totally. And slowly, you know, the negative people drop away from you. They find an exit ramp, and you're surrounded by more joyous people, and the cream rises to the top. Yes. But this is an opportunity for people to make a difference, to leave their legacy behind that they can be proud of, to be their very best selves. But only if they know that they have that available to them.
Possible. And that's where it all begins. Neville Goddard, who I love, a thought teacher, I think, I think he passed in the 70s. I can't recall exactly. But he talked a lot about how powerful we truly are. And he's the one who gave me this idea of everything that you encounter is just you pushed out. And if you can get into the space where you can actually imagine a better world for yourself, for you, you can start with you. That's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I want to imagine for myself a better situation, a better experience. But let's then take that to the next level. Like, I want to imagine a better community for myself and where I live. And I want to imagine a better country. And I want to imagine peace on earth. And I'm going to spend just 10 minutes a day doing that in my imaginal mind. Again, it's real. It's just as real as this reality is. And actually, it's a bit more powerful because there's less of a delay in that particular mm-hmm. reality. And you can start mm-hmm. manifesting very quickly if you keep yourself in the right vibration. But mm-hmm. We all have the power to do that and to envision a different outcome. We just got to start doing it now. And we can't do it from a place of fear either. Like, you know, I listen to a lot of different teachers out there. I've always been super interested in metaphysics. It's been my chief interest since I could, you know, walk. But there's like a lot of false light teachers and implants and archons and matrix and stuff. And I'm not discounting that. But I'm also saying, and I'm more powerful than that. And what can I do to bless the situation that I'm in now? And how can I bring the blessing into the space where I am? We don't see everything. We don't see all the machinations, everything that's happening. But I do know that I can bring my own light. I do know that I can bring my own love. But if I don't believe that it's possible, then it's not going to happen. And Neville said, believing and being are one. And what that means is we have the conscious thought, I am that I am. I am. I'm powerful. Higher self, that's who I am. But if I'm not also being that, vibrating in alignment with that, then I'm not actually living what I believe that I say that I am. So it starts with believing what's possible about yourself. And a lot of times as psychics, we run up against skeptical people, scientifically minded people. Science is just another religion at this point. But mm-hmm. they'll say, well, can you prove that? You know, can we see this?
Oh, yeah, in a laboratory setting, no.
Right.
Yeah, repeat it over and over. Yeah.
My question is, but did you feel that? When I told you that you are an infinite being, that you had the power to create your reality, that you are loved, that you have infinite resources, did you feel that? Did something happen? Did you get goosebumps? Did mm-hmm. you feel it in your heart? Because that is experiential knowledge, and that is powerful. Just follow that. That's your highest excitement. Yeah. People can do that starting right now. You don't have to have all the head knowledge. I'm not an educated person. In fact, if you had met me when I was 18 years old, you would have thought, well, she's borderline illiterate because I didn't have a proper education. I came again out of abuse. And everything I know, how I speak, it's all self-taught, but it doesn't matter. It's through my experience that I've emerged into who it is that I am. And it's through my experiences that I draw more experiences that cause me to emerge into the next experience. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about levels, if I may share, is levels
Please,
like
yeah.
a stairway in a building. We enter in, we're in level one. And we can open the door to level one. We can see all the rooms on level one. Cool. Looks cool on level one. But there's this stairwell thing. And there are steps that lead up to a next level. And so level one isn't just about the level. It's about what's possible, what's going to take us to the next level. And so we start walking up and we take the staircase and we get to level two. We open that door. Super cool. But there's still more steps. There's always more learning. There's always more expansion. Reaching a new level just allows you to reach more levels and access even more resources. That's what makes it super exciting out here in these streets to me.
Yeah.
As long as you stay aligned to that, you got to be hopeful. You know, you've got to hang on to that. You can't. Neville Goddard says, never indulge a low vibrational emotion. Let that teach you. Let it guide you, threads, patterns. But don't indulge it, because now you're just signaling. Now we're just creating more chaos. Instead, get yourself back into the right mindedness. Get yourself back into the love.
Yeah, and to underscore what you said, I'm going to use an example. I did a show once about witchcraft.
Okay.
And I found the perfect guest. It's hard to find, you know, technically speaking, you know, if you're a proper witch, you're not supposed to be talking about that stuff out in the open, you know?
Right.
So I had a few guests said, you know what, you'll never find a good witch to come on because of that, you know? But I was lucky. I found one. And to exemplify what you're talking about, I'm going to take it almost to a negative, mm-hmm. you know, because more people tend to believe in the negative stuff
right.
than the stuff we're talking about. The difference between a wizard and a witch, you know, was not a small one. It was vast, because a warlock or a sorcerer, magician, whatever, will use props to make things happen. Whereas a witch will use her intent and have the power to amend the free will of someone else, mm-hmm. you know, which makes them infinitely more dangerous and scary, especially to people who are afraid of them. Mm-hmm. But the real thing that I learned through this was it was the combination in witchcraft. And, you know, there's some white witches, black witches, all that stuff, you know. I'm not a black magic person per se. I wouldn't mind a white magic thing, but, you know, I don't know if that's mythic. But it's the combination of belief and intent, mm-hmm. all right, which in your example is the same thing. Climbing those stairs, if you understand the power of your belief and intent combined, nobody talks about that. Mm-hmm. If we actually knew the pure power of our intent, we wouldn't believe it mm-hmm. because this system is not set up that way. But it really underscores your point, you know, because if you recognize that your belief to make your life better and others better becomes strong and your intention is heartened, you know, and earnest, you'll be amazed at how quickly you can climb those stairs.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think most of the planet, we're just milling about on floor number one.
This is all there is.
This is what we got. But no, we forget about the doorway. We forget about the steps upward. We don't even know there's levels. We could call these dimensions, higher consciousness, higher understanding. Like, we don't even know it's possible because we're just milling around on level one. And we think that that's all that there is. But that's not true. That's not true. We are infinite, multidimensional people. We are so powerful. And that's what we have to get hip to, man.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do.
Yeah. And it was true 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago. They knew that. They knew. They understood interdimensionals, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, yeah.
you know, It bothers me sometimes to watch shows about ancient civilizations, you know, because they make them look so dumb. Or my friends at Ancient Annals, I do like that show, you know, they get some of the best history you could possibly find anywhere. But then they say, you know, they say, well, but these people must have been so moronic that an extraterrestrial would have to show them, you know, irrigation or agriculture because right. they're moron. No, they didn't have computers and TV to take their, you know what I mean? Right. They were in the elements. Not only that, but 60,000 years ago, before there was homes, indoor plumbing and heating and lighting and computers and technology and everything else, they were on the food chain. Mm-hmm. So something within them had to know that when they're walking alone at night, there's a predatory animal stalking them from behind. Mm-hmm. Because if they didn't know that with that intuition, with that sixth sense that we tend to ridicule for whatever reason, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be here. So not only is it an essential sense, just like the other five, it was necessary to our survival.
Right.
You know, and that is the power of that sense. And we can take that power. And with a good intention, a good hearted intention, you know, just, I mean, real affirmations come, real magical things yeah. happen, you know, and yeah. life changes for the better.
Yes. And you'll notice when you're in that clicked in space of high vibration, and you know it's high vibration because it feels real good. Follow your bliss. It feels real good. You'll notice that these things will start happening, these coincidences, but also these abilities will happen. You'll have visions, you'll have dreams, and all these things will happen. But you're not as focused on those things as you are on just staying in the clicked in alignment of that light or in the alignment of that love. All these things happen very, very naturally. And this instinct that you're speaking about, you know, that's natural. And that's, we got to get people to understand, like, this is perfectly natural. In fact, you came into this world fully lit up, like your whole mm-hmm. house had all the lights, so they were on. However, through life and people and all the experiences we have, you know, the lights start going off and maybe we shut them off ourselves because we're afraid. And a lot of us as kids were mediums. We're seeing weird entities. That scares me. Blanket over my head. Don't want to see that anymore for the rest of my life. And so we turn off our natural abilities. But those lights can come back on in the house. And we have to understand that we're the house and the lights are within us and we can do that. It's perfectly natural to do so.
Right. Yeah, I've been on this path to ascension for a while now because I just love that idea. And I am hitting what they call the 5D.
Yeah.
And it's both remarkable and very unsettling at the same time.
Yeah.
Because the further up I'm going, the more that my lifelong beliefs or things that I've been told for my entire life are simply not what either not true or beyond what I thought them even possible.
Yes. Well, I mean, the older I get, the more I realize. Well, see, I'm coming out of dogmatic fundamentalist Christianity where there's a scripture for everything, mm-hmm. to 50 years old where, like, I don't think I know anything. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, it's so amorphous. I mean, I can feel my way into it, and I'm certainly having, but who am I to say, like, this is how it is, this is the chart of it all? You really realize that the more that you know, the less that you actually do know. And it can be very frightening to be real spirituality, untethered to something like a religious system where you're just out there wandering, figuring it out, feeling your way to something, can be very, very frightening and isolating, but it's so rewarding. You find your way there as long as you stay true to your intent, just as you said, the intent and the belief and the knowingness of who it is that you are that'll guide you to where you want to go. I'm interested, well, I don't know if that we have time. Maybe you can invite me back at some point, but I'm sure. Very interested in dimensionality. And, you know, you're talking about these civilizations that develop these technologies, and Joseph Smith in Power of Myth, he talks about how these different civilizations, you know, unrelated to each other, develop this technology at around the same time, mm-hmm. with no communication between the civilizations. Why?
Right. Right.
This is because of this interdimensional aspect that we're talking about. I believe technologies, spiritual technologies, and even, you know, 3D worldly technologies kind of get sprinkled down from higher dimensions to help us to shift and to help us to transmute. They enter into, I'm kind of getting a little crazy, but they enter into the fourth dimension, which I consider to be a portal dimension. Mm-hmm. Picture, if you will, that bar scene in Star Wars where they enter and everybody's just partying, looks crazy, everybody's crazy looking. Mm-hmm. You really don't know what's going on in 4D. It's a wild card reality, but so much is passing through to include all of this inspiration that's coming down from these higher dimensions. And it's the ones that spend time in their meditation. It's the ones that are checking it out, looking for the subtle clues that actually reach up into 4D and get the inspiration, bring it down into 3D, and then apply it and turn something, you know, create the technology mm-hmm. here. It's reality. Mm-hmm. But it's always being offered. And the thing is, and I tell this story a lot, I wrote The Secret, like the idea of The Secret, well before it ever came out. Like, I was pulling that stuff down from 4D. I was looking at the concepts. I was writing it out, but I didn't do anything with it. And we won't go into LOA because, you know, I have my own philosophy. That was years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was always being offered to me. The knowledge was always being sprinkled down. I always had access to it. However, if I didn't act on it, if I didn't lean into it, well, somebody else is going to reach up there and grab it and bring it down and create it. But I think that's how these civilizations develop their technologies kind of simultaneously.
Yeah. It's very interesting. The greatest coincidence is they all fall in line a major magnetic grid.
Yes.
Of some kind. So they're all aligned with some of the most magnetic, you know, geomagnetic energy of the planet.
Yes.
You know, and I think there is something to magnetism that ties that in. I also mentioned we're talking about Wilhelm Reich in the intro and his orgone energy. I met a guy a couple of weeks ago. I got some friends that work for the Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, mm-hmm. Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Encounters. These are a bunch of people who were, you know, self-proclaimed logically minded, to the, you know, scientists, astrophysicists, lawyers, you know, who had these encounters that they could not push away.
Right.
You know, it completely broke their world. And because they were so good at studying things to find the ways around them, they put all their intention into this and their attention into this. And the reason I mentioned orgone energy, and a guy a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Claude Swanson, has this book, The Science of the Soul, The Afterlife and the Shift, which I highly recommend to people. But he referred to the orgone. He uses something from a Russian physicist called torsion energy. Mm-hmm. And what it is he noticed that life, especially minuscule life, you know, bacterium, viruses, things of that nature, seem to grow in spirals. And he noticed that, you know, the gravity, the dark matter versus the matter, it all has something to do with the rotational energy that we still haven't accounted for yet. They call it dark matter, not because they can't see it. It's just another word for, I don't know.
Exactly.
but because these people have had these experiences, and a lot of them were astrophysicists, they take into consideration consciousness. as not an energy form per se, but a force that manipulates mass and matter, you know, that we haven't accounted for yet. It's kind of like string theory, but it's not. It's vibrational, which is the closest thing to string energy, but it's so subtle. You know, it's like we finally saw a picture of the black hole for the first time ever. And before that, they weren't even sure it really existed. And all they could to think about if it existed or not was this wild rotation of the stars around the center of the galaxy and how improbable it would have to be without something of almost infinite gravity, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that. They're looking at the matter around it. Nor do they think that we're alone in this universe. I mean, every day in astrophysics, they're finding the moons around Saturn, the moons around Jupiter, you know, water. I mean, warm water, salt water, you know, buried beneath these ice sheets. They found water on Mars, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And all the things for life. And even on Titan, which is all methane, liquid methane, and stuff that would kill us, it would still, you know, mean life could exist there, just not life as we understand. So if there is living things, there is consciousness. And if there is consciousness, it's not just coming from us, but it goes into the matter. And because this force is faster than light, and even according to Einstein, it would go backwards in time. Mm-hmm. So spirits, for example. It's just as possible. I'm going to talk a bit. You had an example of a little boy, and I like the way that you talked about what that could mean to people. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that we could see that little boy, like, say, your example, seeing a spirit of a little boy. But that little boy is alive, and in 1845, and the gravity and the torsion energy that has warped space and time in this one little anomaly of energy could mean that they think you're the ghost.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so it could be just seeing somebody that is alive on July 1st, 1945,
right,
talking to you, you know, on April 30th, 2019, you know.
We approach it from such a mystified, you know, standpoint. Oh, that's so mystical. It's an otherworldly thing. No, it's probably physics. I mean, and it's our natural universe, and we just don't understand it completely, which is why it's so frustrating that science just discounts it, you know. So you can't even have a scientist.
Well, that's standard model. That's the reason I mentioned that thing about neutrinos. They actually travel faster than light. Even though it's a hair of a fraction faster than light, it still breaks the code.
Right.
And it opens the gateway for energies, subtle energies, especially like this orgone or torsion or ether or prana, that's faster than light. You know, this astronaut, Edgar Mitchell, they gave him an ESP test while he was in space, right? Mm-hmm. So from Houston to the moon in light speed, it takes 30 seconds for that transmission. But he did the thing with the six cards, the circle and the squirrely lines and all that. And but his impression was instantaneous, and it took another 30 seconds for that impression to travel to Houston. But he found that telepathy was faster than light, because light speed is how the transmission was going, but his telepathy was instantaneous. Mm-hmm. I think he hit 67%, which is way above chance, even for an astronaut, no less, you know. But that's one of the things that they're still doing research on. The telepathy, the clairvoyance, the clairsentience, the things of that nature are instantaneous. Our consciousness is immediate. Our thoughts are faster. Our hearts know something that's going to scare us 6 seconds before it scares us. We just don't know that, you know. So we are these basically souls, these, you know, infinite souls in physical form.
Right.
In this particular incarnation. But science is starting to look at that, or at least alternative theorists are.
Yeah.
So, you know, but if the standard model gets broken over this whole neutrino thing, then maybe they'll start looking at the things that we talk about more seriously.
Maybe. I think the scientific dinosaurs have to pass away a little bit. They're holding on to it like dogma and gatekeeping, you know, what's actually terrible.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I start thinking about that. I start getting super negative, and it feels like we're in this locked in fixed reality. And to some degree, of course, we are in instruments, bodies that are fixed to this reality so that we can navigate them. But we are so much more than that, because our consciousness is not local. It doesn't exist, you know, just inside of my physical body. It's existing somewhere else outside of it. And that's where the power comes in. It's fascinating. There's so many aspects of this life that are fascinating, and I'm grateful. I try to remain grateful for it all. And a lot of that can feel really sophisticated. It can feel really heady. I like to talk just about the simplicity of spirituality, the simplicity of aligning with what's meaningful and joyful for you. I like to talk about bringing the potential for happiness like into your like possible awareness so that you can start seeing it in your life. Because I think if we have more hopeful people, I think if we have more intuitive people, I think that's how we get there faster. We're both talking about getting to a better space, an expanded consciousness. And we want to get there faster rather than later, I would imagine. But that's the whole thing. You got to start with yourself. You have to start with yourself, which is why your program is so wonderful.
Is yours. I'm going to ask you some specific questions about your program, because we do want to get that information out there.
Okay.
But I do want to share one thing briefly with
you
from some former guests I had from a group called LL Research. It was based on a channeler, so I have a quick question about channeling for you. From 1981, this woman, she was not, you know, channeling like sometimes you get a sense of something and you just know it, or you're speaking through someone,
yes,
but something actually embodied her. Mm-hmm. The voice changed, the physicality changed, everything changed, and it represented itself as Ra. Like the sun god Ra here, except Ra was this confederation of intergalactic communities that taught something called the Law of One,
mm-hmm,
which is not too different from a lot of organized religions, especially ancient ones. It said, we all come from the same things. We're all made of the same stuff. So we're all equal. We're all on an equal plane. And it's only identity that counts. There's no polarity. There's no duality, you know. Because ultimately it doesn't take away from the identity, right? So it's no ego, and everything and everyone is equal, all right? Period. And it's just a kind of a fascinating way to look at things. But this woman channeled, you know, like somebody took her over, mm-hmm, spoke in a different voice, you know, with a mm-hmm different manner. Now, you do some channeling, you teach some channeling.
Yes.
And I know there's different kinds of channeling. What kind of channeling are you focused on?
Well, there's the channeling that I do, and then there's the channeling that I teach. And I believe that we all have the capacity to tap in and bring down divine inspiration. That's what channeling is. And we can embody that differently. We can embody that fully. We can, you know, there's a lot of different ways to channel. But what I do is I channel energy, and I call these attunements. And it's been the way in my life that I come into these technologies and I give them names and I think they're unique. And then I find out, oh, somebody's been given attunements for 70 years already. It's been around forever. But I started to call them attunements. And essentially, I worked with a specific angel, and this would be Metatron. And I would channel this energy. It came through my physical instrument, although I was conscious. I mean, very, very passive and neutral, mm-hmm, but conscious. And it would pass through my instrument, and I was able to give that to the receiver of it. And I'm able to do that with crowds of people. And actually, when it's coming out of me, because I'm clairvoyant, when I'm actually dispensing this energy that's coming from a divine source, not through me, it actually looks like sacred geometrical patterns. When I first started doing it, I called it giving stars, because it looked like stars and interesting things. And I'd actually insert them into the fields of people, like where I intuitively knew that I needed to put them. And it would essentially give them the energy that they need in order to reach the next level, whatever that is for them. Like, I don't need to know that. I'm just giving you this attunement or this healing or this energy, and I'm placing it in your field, and then it unpacks as it should. And that's developed over the years. I do some heart stuff and some breath stuff with my attunements.
And light language too.
Yeah, it's all coming full circle, because when I was in that Pentecostal church, you know, we spoke in tongues, and that was, I won't go too much into it, but now I'm really realizing, oh, this is a soul utterance. You know, when you tap into this language of the soul, it's so beautiful, and it's so cathartic and such. And so some of what I do is resonant and tonal. I sing. I have the voice of an angel. I'm just joking. The voice of my generation. No, I'm joking. But I do sing, and I insert these stars, if you will, through tone sometimes. Sometimes it's just a word. I'll come up to someone, I'll place my hand on them, and it's just a word. It can be super random. But that's what I do. I do adjustments, and always with the permission of the person. That's just how it emerges through me, but there's all kinds of different ways to channel, you know, and there's all kinds of different ways to offer the inspiration that flows through us to a world that desperately needs it.
Yeah, and people kind of refuse to believe that they can embrace divinity. It's not supposed to be that way. There are divine figures to do that. And with that said, though, because we're getting very close to being out of time, so I want to make sure we get all of your information. People can find out where to contact you. This is Crystal Ann Compton, our honored guest today here on Kindness Beyond the Veil, your host, Chip Reichenthal. So proud to have Crystal Ann Compton with us. Where can people find you?
Well, they can find, I'm most active on YouTube, on the tube. Mm-hmm. You can just Google, YouTube, search my name, Crystal Ann Compton. I've got...
Yeah, it's Ian with an E, by the way.
That's right. Don't forget the E. It's very important. Yeah. I think I have about 600 or 700 videos. A lot of videos. I also have a community online called the Lightworkers Lab. Now, we do have a website, thelightworkerslab.com, but we're on Facebook. So you can go on Facebook, you can search the Lightworkers Lab. We've got almost 9,000 people, but we're a real intentional community. It's not like a dumpster fire, like a lot of Facebook groups or forums out there. It's just crazy. Wild, wild west. We're very intentional. We keep the space at a certain rate, if you will. So there's always somebody teaching, always somebody healing. It's free to members. My vision for the space is just to edify, enrich, and also provide a safe space where people can say, whoa, this is happening to me. How can I put this into the right context? And so we're just a service-oriented community, but lots of dynamic things are happening there. You can also reach me at crystalannecompton.com. I very infrequently do readings these days, just because I teach a lot and I've got a lot of things going on.
Yeah, so only so many hours in the day.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And but I do sometimes, and I'll offer it. I also do some mentorship when approached, and there's a vibe where I can kind of help people energetically get to the space of belief that we're talking about, where I say believing and being are one. Like, in order for you to hit level two, you got to believe X, Y, and Z about yourself and what's possible. And so I actually, through attunements and energy stuff and also teaching, I can get people to that place, and then we can go on from there. So that's just, you know, I'm on the internet.
You go, girl. Yeah. And I enjoy watching the YouTube videos, and I've seen the websites, crystalannecompton.com and thelightworkerslab.com. I highly recommend them. There are a lot of different courses that she has available. She does do readings from time to time. But there's so much going on, and it's making such a great difference in this world.
You.
We're so proud to have you on,
proud to know you.
And we will have you back, you know, if you can hang on after the show, you know, hang with us for a couple minutes. We can talk a little bit more in detail about that. For those of you joining us, we thank you so much for hearing us here on Kindness Beyond the Veil. Beloved listeners, we always love having you along. Means the world to us, and we thank you. Wherever you're listening, don't touch that dial. Great programming coming up next. If you're listening to us on WCET-FM, the great Michael Vera is up next with Late Night in the Midlands. If you're hearing us on United Public Radio Network, and it's the weekend, well, they got all sorts of really cool stuff that they save for the weekend. Spaced Out Radio. There's news tidbits with Joe Montaldo, and sometimes the news itself. And it's always good to stay informed. So don't touch that dial wherever you're hearing us. Please join us again next week. Our guest is Susie Miller with her program for autistic children called Awesomism. And we certainly hope you're there for that. It's going to be very special. Meanwhile, all we ask from here is that you please subscribe or donate to this network. We could certainly use the help and keep shows like this on the air. Meantime, thank you again for joining us. We love you all. Check us out next week, and don't touch that dial. Have a great, great night, everybody. Thank you so much. God bless.